Welcome to Modern Practice. On this episode, we'll continue our discussion on the new macro rules for 2022. I'm your host, Dr. Tom Villanueva, and I'm bringing you excerpts from the recent Vizient Medical Leadership Series webcast. I was the host, and we featured Valinda Rutledge and Dr. Manny McDowell from SG2 to outline the latest changes from CMS. Let's take a listen to the second part of the webcast.
So we are entering 2022 payment year, which is 2020 performance year. It's 2 years behind. So COVID, that the uncontrollable circumstance exemption has been applied to COVID. So what we will likely see is that those that are going to receive a penalty will be able to get that exemption status. And what that does is it reduces the penalty pool, which is because this is a zero-sum game, which is what funds the bonus pool. And so that minus 9% to plus 9% is not fully achieved in terms of the bonus. So while the payment range can theoretically range between minus 9 to plus 9%, depending on your MIP score, you could get up to plus 9%. There has to be enough providers in that penalty range to fund the positive bonuses. And in past years, this has not occurred, with the average bonus much lower than, for example, in 2020, when everybody got their bonuses, it was much lower than that 5%, more closer to 1.5%. And it's important to mention too that that 5% exceptional performance bonus, that's funded by Congress, $500 million. That did help buoy some of the bonuses people saw in 2020. And because that is scheduled to expire in 2025, what we're looking at with MIPS is a lot of the incentive is to avoid a penalty going forward, that minus 9%. Unless there's some significant changes made, there's not a lot of meaningful bonus added for exceptional performance. Want to also mention that the advanced APM, that gives you a 5% lump sum bonus and no real reporting as long as you're in qualify. There is a lot of talk, and Belinda's mentioned this too, that will likely be renewed in 2025 because they want to make sure that there is some type of incentive. But the exceptional performance bonus is at risk of not being renewed.
And Belinda, what are the changes to the final score?
Yeah, so the final score, we're finally at the last few years, as I said, has been a transitional year to get us feeling comfortable, particularly with the cost category. The cost category, Tom, as you know, is probably one of the most difficult that the practices are concerned about. And so we have slowly started out with only 10% at the cost category. And now we were mandated in the macro rule through the discretion of the secretary. But by 2022, they would have to have equal weighting in cost and quality. So right now, as you can see, the cost and quality is equally weighted at 30%. The promoting interoperability and improvement activities that have always stayed at 15 and 25. So we are now where we are going to be staying in the equal weighting of the cost and the quality. I would suspect, Tom, that people will start, particularly the practices, having quite a bit of difficulty with this cost category now that it has reached 30% and it's equally weighted.
You know, when we started reviewing all this in preparation of the Zoom meeting, I made the comment as a practicing physician that the juice ain't worth the squeeze anymore and dealing with MIPS. And this is time, if you've not been preparing yourself to become part of an APM, you should really be considering it at this moment. I was wondering if Pavitha, you wanted to comment on that.
I think it's a tough situation in MIPS because the meaningful bonus has just not been manifested, right? There's not enough penalty money to support it. And so the only way to really do well is to get to that exceptional performance bonus. There's a lot of reporting requirements and it does make it very challenging. So all along, I think we've been saying this, that you're really best positioned to go to an advanced APM if you can do that over time, because you just get a 5% lump sum bonus for the work you're already doing in the other APM models. But Belinda, do you have anything else to say?
Yeah, the only thing is, I think that these reporting categories and particularly adding a cost onto it at 30%. Tom, it's not only, as Maddie said, the 5%, but I think it's the reporting burden. Right. It's the heavy lift that you are in a practice. You already have issues with staffing. You're dealing with COVID. And now you've got these additional reporting. I think CMS has tried as much as possible to limit the reporting burden. But at the end of the day, it's going to be much easier for you to be in with either a larger numbers of practices and reporting together or into advanced APM, as Maddie has said, to get that 5%. It's that opportunity to have other people assisting you. And so if you're in with 10 other practices, you can actually designate one or two of the staff of those 10 practices to be the quality people that will go ahead and pull that from all the patient data and be looking at the reports. It's much harder when you're trying to do it at an independent practice. So I agree with Maddie from a financial point of view. It makes sense to go into advanced APM, but I also believe it's from a reporting burden. It also makes sense. You just have more people helping you.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. We also know that MIPS allows for a number of value pathways or MVPs to achieve reporting requirements. Can you help us understand what we mean by MVPs?
Been in the works and in the final rule now, it's a go for 2023 and we have 7 finalized pathways. But first want to explain that I think the goal is to transition from the quality metrics and just sort of more fragmented approach with MIPS to make these pathways and eventually we will go to these value pathways for everything. They still have those 4 categories. So quality, improvement, cost, and interoperability. However, it's designed a little bit more towards the provider and specialty and condition. So for example, for rheumatology, you pick 4 quality metrics in a list of metrics that are related to rheumatology. And then you pick 1 or 2 improvement activities that are more related to your work. The other thing that's interesting in these pathways is they've developed a few cost measures now that are not just the total cost of care, but some specific cost measures for a specific condition. So getting a little more refined in terms of that cost measure. It's not for all 7 pathways, but for some of them. And in addition to this, they've added a population health measure that you don't have to actually submit the data. It's reported in your claims data. They've got 2 that they've proposed. One is the all-cause unplanned readmission. And the other benchmark is admission rate for multiple chronic disease. So you can see the direction that CMS is heading in terms of MIPS. This is going to be a gradual introduction over 4 years. All individual providers, single and multi-specialty providers can participate in the MVP. Now, it's important to mention that a multi-specialty group in 2025, they will have to report at the subgroup level, which makes sense. You don't want your large multi-specialty group reporting on rheumatology only. So they'll break it out so that you'll be able to report the different specialties and conditions over time.
Well, that makes sense. And then we spoke about where many of us should be really seriously considering leaving MIPS and going into an APM, particularly an advanced MPM. Belinda, can you help us understand what qualifies that as being an advanced APM?
Yeah. So CMS and CMMI has quite a bit of different advanced APMs. Most of them started in many years. For instance, the Medicare ACO track, 1+, all the pathways to success, the Maryland total cost of care model, they have been in here for years. The ones that we will see that started in 2021, but will be eligible in 2022 to qualify as advanced APM is primary care first, direct contracting. They started April 1st of 2021. So in 2022, they'll be able to qualify. And kidney care first. Now, the one I want to bring to everybody's attention was radiation oncology. Radiation oncology model was supposed to start January 1st, 2022. And in that legislative package that the House passed, part of it was delaying the radiation oncology model until January 1st, 2023. This will be the third delay of this model, Tom. Now, it of course has to go to the Senate and be passed at the Senate to be finalized. But I certainly got a lot of people last night emailing me saying I was all ready to start January 1st.
Right.
I've been redoing my workflows.
Right.
I've been putting things in Epic. Are you telling me that this may stop? And I said, very possibly, we're just going to have to wait until the Senate makes the determination. But I think there's a strong possibility it'll be delayed until January 1st, 2023.
Belinda, is this any indication on what we are to expect from bundles going into the future?
I think a CMMI is really looking at how to implement the bundles so that there's not a lot of overlap between the population base with ACO and many of these other total cost of care models. And so they are spending a lot of time in thinking, and their new strategic plan talks about refresh in the bundles, and they've been asking for a lot of input with stakeholders around the country. So I would anticipate us hearing from them in terms of their vision of the bundles sometime in 2022.
Well, that's the end of this episode for Modern Practice. Our thanks to Dr. Maddie McDowell and Belinda Rutledge for their insights on the new macro rule. And to our listeners, please listen for other Modern Practice podcasts. Subscribe today, like us, or send us your comments. I'm Dr. Tom Villanueva. Thank you so much for listening.